Today on the podcast, we're going to be talking to Sammy Bowler. If you've been watching this channel, you've heard me talk about him. He's one of the best upcoming guitar players on the scene. He spent some time with us today talking about gear, music, and let's get started. It's weird now, right? When you see people like post-COVID, post, you know, pre-COVID, post-COVID now.
I saw you right before everything shut down at the last NAMM. It was like a month before.
Yes.
I was just thinking about that right when I was calling. Yeah, it's a totally different world now, man. It's crazy.
Well, let's talk about some cool stuff going on now. So you were on tour? You're doing some more touring?
I just got home, man. Yeah, everything's kind of back to normal now as far as that goes, at least it seems to be. But yeah, we were out for a couple of weeks doing... I put an instrumental album out actually shortly after when we last hung out at NAMM or whatever, but the first time we got to play it live, so it was a blast, man. We're out for a few weeks, so
that's the Kingdom of the Sun, right?
Correct.
Now that you have the album out, and what's the next step?
I don't want to just make like a part two to the record I just put out, you know. Right. So it's, I'm trying some different stuff and write, you know, trying some new approaches to writing and stuff like that. So it's been a blast, man. We just did, during quarantine, I started a new band too with, it's called Pharaohs, with this amazing singer from Kentucky. His name's Cam Clark. And, on the tour we just did, he came out with us. And, at the end of the night as the encore, we were trying some of our new songs, which is, it's more of like a traditional rock band, like four piece rock band. So we have that album completely done. So hopefully that's going to be coming out early next year as well. So I'm working on like two albums right now, but the Pharaohs record's like pretty much done.
So obviously you made a quick name yourself real fast for your tapping ability. So I've got to ask you, like, who are your tapping influences? You know, Stanley Jordan? Is it, you know, Nuno? Is it Eddie? Is it someone totally different?
Yeah, thanks so much, man. I think, I don't know. I mean, I grew up on Van Halen. That's how everybody first gets into tapping. You know, at least all my buddies got into tapping because of that. You know, you heard Eruption when you were a kid, and that's like, whoa, how do you do that? So that's kind of how I first started getting into it. I don't really know how like the arrangements and stuff that a lot of the stuff I do now, you know, I really liked a lot of acoustic guitar players when I was a kid too. Like when I was a kid, it was like the beginnings of YouTube, like with Andy McKee. And you remember some of those videos, with the crazy acoustic guitar and like the movie August Rush. I don't know if you ever saw that.
Oh,
with
yeah,
Robin
of course.
Williams.
Yeah.
I love that movie. Yeah. And the guitar player that played all that is named Cocky King. So I liked doing some of that stuff on acoustic when I was a kid, just as like, I don't know, it was fun in addition to like being a metalhead, you know. It was like kind of an interesting contrast, you know?
Right.
So, I mean, I started as far as like some of the tapping stuff that I'm working on now, I started doing it pretty much like, I don't even know, maybe like 4 or 5 years ago. I got off tour and was kind of like sick of everything I was playing. So I kind of tried to go back. And sometimes when you're like in a rut as a guitar player or any musician, it's good to kind of like go to the totally opposite thing that you've been doing, you know, and try to expand on that. So that's when I just started, I kind of like got back into like a really heavy practicing phase of going, man, this is kind of cool. I kind of just stumbled upon it. And whenever you find something like that in your guitar playing, it's good to just keep working at it and expand it as far as you can, you know? So that's, I don't know. I feel like I've only cracked the surface of it or something. Like that's something I work on every day, trying to come up with new ways to use that technique, I guess.
Everyone has a really different way of approaching that same technique.
Right.
You know what I mean? Some come at it like your style is more piano-esque. You know what I mean? You're doing a lot of piano type stuff, but with distortion, which to me is a trickier thing to pull off because, you know,
it is that it takes a lot, you know, that's a great question. It's trickier when you're doing like multi-string tapping and playing melodies with heavy distortion, like I like to use. It is a different animal. You have to really learn, you have to really work out what you're gonna do, if that makes sense. You know, like it's hard to kind of go off the cuff live when you have a really, really heavy sound and you're doing that some of that stuff. But for me, I always try to, I usually, when I'm working on those melodies and stuff, I usually do it clean first. Like I try to get it sounding cool with a clean sound. And then some riffs, like they kind of lend better to being heavy. So just kind of try to convert them over, I guess.
That's how
I usually do it. Yeah.
That would make sense. Like I said, distortion, what's great about distortion, it kind of hides a little bit. But in your technique, distortion doesn't hide anything. It actually accentuates any mistakes you might make.
Some of it does. I've learned that live, especially after playing some of the music live the past few weeks on the road or whatever. It was like, that's one beautiful thing about playing live and playing loud and with a band. You know, it brings out different nuances of what you're doing depending on where you are, how it sounds on stage, or you know how your monitors are, that type of thing. So, yeah, it's a constant. Just like every guitar player goes through that, man. The struggle of trying to grow, you know, and trying to figure out where you're at.
Yeah. So I see you got your guitars behind you. I love both your NoHo and your Les Paul.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. Cause it's got the Floyd and the Les Paul. So it sticks out obviously, which is nice.
It's an interesting guitar. Yeah. I can grab that if you want. Or yeah. I can grab the NoHo. I think I had the NoHo when we first met.
When you showed it to us, I said, oh, it reminds me of like an old picket fence in front of like an old, like, you know, worn out church kind of vibe. It's got like,
I love that. Yeah. I remember you saying that. Yeah. It's a cool guitar, man. It's with these guitars. I'm sure, you know, like the Friedman NoHos, they're all like really high flame top or whatever, but this one has that underneath, but we just kind of put like a worn out white finish over it. So that's kind of sacrilegious to a lot of people, like covering up a nice flame top. But I don't know. I thought it was cool.
That's why it is cool. It's cool because it's a tease.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And what's cool about it is like the more banged up it gets, like you only get what's underneath, which is really pretty flame top or whatever. So it's a great guitar, man. I love this thing.
Well, it's 24 inch scale. You know, what's funny was, it's 24 inch scale guitar and 24 and three quarters. Sorry.
Yeah.
Whatever. I remember, when you were showing it, I was like, oh, that's different, you know, cause that's not the normal scale length. And then when later, you didn't have with you later, when I saw a video of you with your Les Paul and that was kind of like your main axe, I was like, oh, this makes sense. And I have a, you know, over the years working on so many guitars for players, what I've learned is players, they can know nothing about guitars. It doesn't matter. Instinctually, they just kind of gravitate towards things. You know what I mean? Like they don't need to know the anatomy of a guitar. You know, my comment always is you could take a guitar tech, a luthier, put them in a music store, take a accomplished guitar player, put them in the same music store, tell them to pick out three of the best guitars and they'll all come out with the same guitars. One is going to do it by, like I said, kind of evaluating the anatomy of the guitar and how good the quality is, and the guitar player is just going to play it.
Right.
So I thought that was interesting that you like that guitar and that it's also kind of like your Les Paul.
I love it. I've played that Les Paul for years. Like that's been my main guitar for years. But when I started doing stuff with Dave and doing clinics and stuff like 3 or 4 years ago, they had just, their guitars were kind of like brand new, you know, and this was a brand new model. And when I saw it at NAMM and picked it up, I was like, oh, this feels great. I didn't even know, kind of like what you just said, like I didn't know it was the same scale length as a Gibson or a Les Paul or whatever, but it's like, wow, this feels awesome. And it's really cool. Like I had never really had a 24 fret guitar before. So having 24 frets with that scale length, like you said, is, it's just an interesting thing. So yeah, it's worked great, man. The nice thing about it too is, some people like really like to change guitars on stage. Like I'm not really one of those people. Like I like to stick with one and like switching guitars always kind of like throws me off. But what's nice is since they feel so similar, like even though they're completely different axes and body styles and everything, it still feels so close. Like it doesn't, it's awesome. It's like seamless, you know, but it's because of the scale length.
Yeah. And that's another thing too about you. That's interesting. You're a younger player. And you tend to like this older type gear, which is not normal as well. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
You know, I think you're using the small box. Is that what you're playing through now?
I use a BU 100.
Oh, so BE-100, is that what's behind you, is right there, is the BE-100?
That's a BE-100. Yeah, that's, I've used that amp, like, I know you've gone through it too, is like the constant tone search. Every guitar player goes through that, but as soon as I found that, it's like, I don't know, it, like, something just clicked for me. Like, I tried every high gain amp up until I discovered that. And sometimes you just hit on something where you're like, it's perfect. You know what I mean? I wouldn't change a thing. But I'm one of those guitar players that loves to have a really loud amp on stage still, you know?
Right.
Everybody's different. And the technology, I mean, the past few years or more, you know, 10 years even, it's grown a lot for guitars as far as like modeling and all that. But I don't know. You just can't beat having like a half stack and going for it, you know?
Oh, absolutely. I want to love Axe FX and Kemper. I want to. Like, yeah. I'm jealous of people who tell me they love them.
Right.
You're like, that you think about how easy your life would be, right? No giant amp, no cabinet, no, right? Everything will be perfect. And there's nothing wrong with those units for me. I absolutely love them. But yeah, I need something that punches a little bit, just a little bit.
For me, it's like a feel thing. Like I've been in some situations where I've had to use like a Kemper or an Axe FX, you know, but you just can't beat the feeling, like the actual response. Like, you can, those are cool. And for some situations they do sound good.
Yeah.
And I don't knock anybody for using them because they're so, like you said, it's so convenient, you know? But one thing I think for live, if you're using those, running them through a cabinet helps a lot as opposed to going, like, whenever I go see my buddy's bands and they're using like a Fractal or a Kemper, if they go straight into the PA, it's like almost like the guitars are like non-existent or something. It's weird. Like, even if they're mixed really hot, it still feels like super, super flat for some reason. But it's because there's nothing moving air, you know, like when you have a cabinet on stage and it's mic'd up, it's pushing, you know, so there's something to mic up as opposed to just like a line. So I don't know, for me I'll probably always be an amp guy no matter how crazy that technology gets, you know.
I think it's funny now. It actually sucks as an audience member. You go and see your a band that you love and you see the Kempers, you know, and here's what happens. You go up to the edge of the stage.
Yeah.
And there's no volume because they're all coming through their PA. And if they have in-ears, it's even worse because there's no stage volume. So you're hearing everything like behind you and on the sides as an echo.
And yeah, it's weird.
It's weird because you want to be like, yeah, let's rock. And instead you're like, you feel like you're at the library. You're like, I don't want to be too loud.
Isn't that weird? That always like trips me out about it. It's like all the music we grew up with, all those bands were so loud on stage. So loud. The stage volume was insane. Like, you know, way different than it is now. But that's like a part of like the danger of being in a rock band, or like the excitement, you know, like if you went to see like Zeppelin or something and it was like that, it wouldn't be the same thing, you know.
Yeah.
If the only thing on stage was Bonham and Robert Plant singing, stage volume, it's like it just wouldn't be the same, you know.
Yeah, it's, and like I said, and that's why I said it's another thing that's interesting that I noticed about you. Like I said, you're using bigger amps, bigger cabinets, which helps you, you know, have a great tone, but also, you know, I understand the appeal, especially you're, you know, as a younger musician now, you don't have to deal with that stuff. You know, think about this. A lot of us just had big amps. So like, I have to tell you, like, I love my Marshall. I love them so much, but I don't play them. I play my Friedmans.
Right.
I have my small box and my Dirty Shirley, which is my twin sister. It's a twin sister. And,
cool.
Yeah, I love the twin sister. I just, for some reason, the small box records super well. Like,
it does.
And my world is all about recording, you know, for demos and stuff like that, you know, for videos. And it lends itself to great recording. But this whatever this is just years of me being used to this. So I always take notice that, like, when you started, you were probably presented immediately with options. And you chose those options. You know what I mean?
That is completely true. Yeah, that's an interesting that's an interesting take on that. And it's true. Like when I first started, I think the It was like the Pod XT days, you know, that was that was the only modeler, you know what I mean? Which I had one of those when I was a kid, like before I really owned a tube amp. It's like, that's what I could afford. So it's like, oh wow, you get all these amps, you know, in one little thing, but you're sitting there just going like, something's weird here, you know? And then when you finally do get to, I think the first real like tube amp I ever got was a 5150, like an old block letter one.
Yeah.
And then you plug into that, it's like, oh, there it is. You know, that's what I'm used to hearing, or closer at least, you know? Yeah, I don't know. I think everybody's different. That's one of those things where it's like, I encourage everybody to try Absolutely. Everything you can get your hands on. I think that's important. Because not every, you know, my rig isn't right for, you know, it might not be right for you or my, you know, my buddy next door or whatever, you know what I mean? But, it's the same thing with like, sometimes I'm sure you've had this where you pick up your buddy's guitar and you go, how do you even play this thing? The action's like this high off the net, you know, they go, dude, it's perfect for me. It's the same thing with amplifiers or effects or anything. Like if you find what's perfect for you, you just roll with it, you know?
Yeah. I think it was you. I think you and I were talking at the NAMM show about this. Cause I think you've also had this, the same experience. I've been fortunate to pick up a few, let's say, quote unquote, rock stars guitars. And I think you were talking about this too. We won't say names, that way we'll keep it, you know, kind of cool.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. Cool. And I remember like you were saying the same thing as I was, which is like, yeah, you pick them up and you're like, oh, I couldn't play this guitar for, like, it was almost like, what the hell's wrong with this guitar?
Yeah.
And because, you know, I think you picture, in my head, I picture everyone's guitar, that, you know, every famous rock star's guitar is the best playing guitar you could probably ever imagine.
It's what you'd think, right? Yeah, I do remember talking about this with you. Yeah. That's what, yeah, exactly. And you pick it up and you're like, what? You know, those strings are, yeah, it's weird. It's like, how do they even play this? Well, I can't make it stay in tune, but then of course you hand it back and they make it stay in tune perfectly, you know? My guitars are like weirdly set up. Like I have the action so low that sometimes like my friends will come over and they're like, yeah, that's too weird. I've never played something like that. It's too weird, you know? But for me, it's perfect. So yeah, I don't know. As far as like picking up, like, I don't know. I've gotten it, like we talked about it now. Like I've gotten to pick up some, like, I don't know, guitars you look at on the screen for years and then you get to try them or whatever. And you're like, really? So there's nothing, it's just different than what you picture in your head.
Yeah. you know? You picture it. Like I said, you think in your head, it's going to be the perfect guitar.
Perfect.
Like perfect. You're like, you know, and then you realize, like, I guess they just picked up a guitar one day and started playing it like everybody else. And that's just what it is.
We'll be right back.
If you love good music and good podcasts, you'll love Roots Music Rambler. I'm Jason Falls. My co-host Francesca Folinazzo and I talk to the singers, songwriters, musicians, and more in Americana, alt-country, bluegrass, folk, blues, and beyond. We share our own takes on the latest news in the space and recommend new music for you to explore every episode. Come get to the roots of the music you love. Find us at rootsmusicrambler.com or go wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to Roots Music Rambler.
Yeah. And like you develop a touch with your own instrument, you know, like, you know, all the little nuances and things that maybe, you know, it takes years to develop like a, that's something I really believe. Like it takes a long time to develop like a personal relationship with an instrument, you know, where, you know, every guitar has certain little things in it that sometimes can be weird, you know, like maybe it'll have a little dead spot here or whatever, or, you know, scratchy pots or whatever. But, once you have that relationship with your guitar, though, it's like that's when it becomes a part of you, I think.
Did you know, it's like this weird Eddie Van Halen fact that I always thought was funny, was he didn't clean his guitars and no one was ever allowed to.
No, I did not know that. What do you mean? Yeah. Like clean the necks or clean?
Clean it, period. Wipe them down, clean them. Like it's not allowed. So like none of his
guitars. I wonder
why. Yeah.
You know why?
That I know is true. Then the rumor parts come, you know, the reasoning why, like everyone I was talking to, because I was actually talking to the guys that were working on duplicating his guitars. You know what I mean?
Right.
And that's what they were saying, was that he's really hardcore about the fact, like, don't wipe anything off. Don't clean anything. Don't, you know, he just likes the grime on there. And
I wonder why. I mean, yeah. I don't know. I know he didn't really use guitar cases. Like there's a lot of stories about him just like throwing his guitar in his truck and going.
But... Yeah. And no guitar stands. Like in the studio, they just leaned up against the walls and piled up on each other.
I like that though. I think that's cool. You know, it's like he treats it like his guitar is like a weapon. You know, it's like just like going to battle or something. But that's weird. I didn't know he didn't clean the things though. Especially like you get like they would do those long tours back in the day. By the end, those were probably just like
covered, demolished. In slime.
Yeah, just gnarly. But that's funny. It's like you wonder. Yeah, you wonder. But Eddie always kind of like went to his own beat of his own drum. You know, with everything. So.
You mentioned originally being inspired by acoustic guitar. Do you play much acoustic guitar now?
I've been filling in with Scott Stapp the past couple of years, and we mostly do like acoustic shows. Like we just did an acoustic gig a couple nights ago, but I got a fret level done on this Martin. That was my one quarantine guitar purchase. I found like an old D35 for a good price in Detroit on Craigslist.
Right.
And bought it and needed a lot of work, you know, like the action was like a mile off the neck and, you know, it was dried out, needed to be humidified and stuff. But I took it to my friend here that sets up my guitars, whatever. And he dialed this thing in, man, where it plays like the best playing Les Paul you've ever played. Like the action's perfect. It sounds incredible. And it was really just because of a fret level, you know, and a good setup.
So when's the next show? When's the next, do you know? And we can shout that out.
I have a couple of things coming up with Scott. We're playing in Vegas right before Thanksgiving, I think on the November 22nd. It's an acoustic show.
That's pretty bad.
So that's, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's always fun being in Vegas. I can only be there for about a day and then I'm sick of it, but it's a fun town.
It's got to be great. I mean, he's a double diamond artist, right? He's sold double diamond albums before.
It's incredible. Yeah, it's sometimes a pleasure playing with him, man. I've always been like a really big Mark Tremonti fan as well. Oh, so
huge. I'm a Creed fan. I have no shame in it. I know it's like for some reason Creed got like, I don't know, a stigma. But to me, like when Creed came out, to me it was them and Godsmack. When those two bands came out, I was in love.
When I was a kid, man, Creed was as big as it. Big as it was at the time, you know, I was learning how to play guitar. They're huge.
Huge, huge band.
Yeah. It's really cool. Yeah. I love playing with Scott. It's one of the coolest things is you start a song and everybody knows every single word to every song of the set. It's like, I've never had anything like, never been around anything like that, you know, where he can just hold the mic out. He doesn't even have to, he wouldn't even have to sing if he didn't want to, you know? So it's a blast, man. And playing that stuff live is really, really fun. Trying to get it right, you know. I enjoy that. Like I've always enjoyed that, like trying to get the guitar parts just like the record, you know. So that's fun. So that's the next thing I have coming up.
So we'll end on this note. What's the hardest song to play? What's the hardest Creed type song or Creed song to play?
Hardest Creed song to play? Yeah. Good question. To be honest, probably One Last Breath. That's probably the trickiest one. The finger picking, that's harder than it sounds. I'm always like, I really don't want, and it's like so well known. Like if you mess it up, it's really, really embarrassing. So if you have a chance to try to learn that, that's like kind of an interesting little picking pattern at the top or whatever, finger picking pattern.
Yeah, because I always like asking that question about stuff like that, because I think Phil X once told me, he was talking about Bon Jovi songs and he mentioned like one's really hard. And the hard part about it was his hand was cramping.
Really?
Yeah.
You remember what song it was?
I don't remember the song. I just remember the complaint was that it's only like three chords or two chords. So it's actually, its difficulty was in its simplicity because it was holding that position for so long that his hand would cramp.
His hand would cramp, couldn't get to the end of the song. I love stuff like that. You know, that's an interesting thing. Like sometimes you hear songs your whole life and then you finally go to play them and go, oh, wait a minute. That's a beautiful thing about like transcribing music is, I don't know, you like by learning it and really internalizing it, you kind of get a totally different experience out of it and you end up listening to it in a different way than you did for all those years before you knew how to play it, you know?
Oh yeah.
And some things like you go, oh, that's really easy. And then you go to learn it and it's really hard. And the opposite, sometimes things sound crazy hard, but there's nothing to it, you know?
Tim Pierce once told me there's a thing called guitar player DNA.
The thing is, it comes out of your DNA and your lifetime as a guitar player. And that's often the hardest thing is to interpret somebody else's kind of lifetime DNA in their riffs.
I like the way you just put it. Yeah, the DNA of every guitar player does have a different DNA. And one thing, I guess, something I tell guitar students all the time, and I guess anybody listening, when you're learning a piece of music, I encourage trying to pick up everything about what the guitar player did, like all those, even the really weird, say they play things in a really weird fingering or they do a weird pull off. When you learn something, you want to learn it the exact way they played it, the same fingering, same position. A lot of the times, like you can play the same thing in different positions, but it's really not the same thing. You know, it's different if you played it, you know, at the seventh fret or the second fret, you know? So that's really, really learning a piece of music. And if you do that with like your guitar player you really love, say you're just starting out and learning how to play, like no matter who you love, you love AC/DC or Van Halen or whatever, if you do that with a large quantity of somebody's music, it's almost like you get to know them because you're learning all the little intricacies and like you're getting inside of their musical DNA, I guess. So yeah. that's what I encourage, is like when you learn a song, you have to cop all of it, the feel, the fingerings, everything.
Yeah. That's great advice. So we got to end on that because that's great advice.
So, awesome. Thanks, man. I appreciate you having me on, Phil. It's always good to talk to you, bro.
Thank you. Thank you, Sammy. You, man. Oh, yeah. Like I said, I'm sure we'll see each other as the world opens back up.
Absolutely, man.
So.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me on, man.
All right. You're welcome. Thank you. And I'll talk to you soon.
Cheers.
Before we go, I want to let you know about this Donner Black Friday sale that they're going to be having. They've given us KYG discount codes so you guys can get 20, 25, 30% off. All you have to do is click any of the links down below to get the discounts. They're going to be on guitars, pedals, you name it, and a special discount on the Recho pedal, which is a delay and reverb pedal. And I want to thank Donner for supporting videos like this. It's great to have musicians on the channel and have these great discussions. And I want to thank the sponsors that helped that happen.